How many of you believe that Jesus carried his own cross? How many believe that another person carried Jesus' cross? If you just read the Synoptic Gospels, here's what you would read. I'm going to read from Mark chapter 15. I'll drop all the way down to verse 21. And verse 20. After they had mocked him, they took a purple robe off him and put on his own garments on him. They led him out to crucify him. Verse 21, Mark 15. They pressed into service a passerby. I'm reading from the New American Standard Version. They pressed into service a passerby, one coming from the country, a person by the name of Simon of Cyrene, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to bear his cross. Dropping down the book of Matthew, let's go to Matthew's Gospel, chapter 27, verse 31. After they had mocked him, they took a scarlet robe off him and put on his own garments back on him, and they led him away to crucify him. As they were coming out, they found a man of Cyrene named Simon, whom they pressed into service to bear his cross. Luke's Gospel, dropping down to verse 25, and he released the man they were asking for. Of course, you know, he said, I'm going to give somebody, who do you want? You want this insurrectionist, the Barabbas, or do you want this man called King of the Jews, Jesus? And they said, you know, we want you to release Barabbas. So he released the person they were asking for that had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, but he delivered Jesus to their will. And when verse 28, this is Luke chapter 23, verse 28, when they had led him away, they seized a man, Simon of Cyrene, coming in from the country, and placed on him the cross to carry behind Jesus. Those are the three synoptics. They don't mention a word about Jesus carrying his own cross. So if you just had those three gospels, you would believe, you would think, that Jesus did not pick up his own cross at all. He did not pick. Now, when you say cross, you know, he didn't pick up the whole thing that went like that. He picked up only the parabellum. They usually had that up, the big stake already fixed. It was ready for you, or it was lying there. And when they came, then they stuck, you know, put them on. There were various ways of the crucifixion, depending on how you did it. Sometimes they just hoisted you up and nailed your other part up there, nailed your hands to it, nailed your feet down to the part. Sometimes they did it while you were on the ground, then lifted you up and dropped it into a hole. And that was very torturous, because now you were tearing, your hands were tearing, your feet were tearing, because they dropped this thing, and the only thing supporting you are the nails in your hands. And it was very difficult. But as he so often does, the Apostle John, in his gospel, the Gospel of John, fills in some of the specifics that the Synoptic Gospels don't do. So when we read the book of John, chapter 19, and dropping down to verse 16, so the soldiers took charge of Jesus, verse 17, carrying his own cross. He went out to the place of the skull, which is in Aramaic called Golgotha. Here they crucified him with two others, one on each side, and Jesus in the middle. That's from the New International Version. Okay. So without John's gospel telling us this, we would not be able to know that Jesus. So here's, when you put them all together, here's what you get. Jesus was scourged. You remember Pilate said, well, look, what do you want me to do with this guy, you know? And, you know, crucify him. Well, why don't we just take him? Look, I'm going to scourge him for you. And they beat him, you know, with that scourge whip, and he was just beaten and beaten. And they drag him out. He's bleeding. He's bloody. And he says, okay, look at the man now. What do you want me to do with him? Look at the guy. I beat him up. Can we just let him go? And they said, crucify him. So now they're marching through the streets, all the prisoners, and they're going to crucify him. And they're taking him. So they put this crossbeam, which is usually what they call the parabellum, and they put the crossbeam on Jesus, and he's carrying it. But he's now weakened. He's been beaten. He's been up all night. He hasn't had any food. He's lost a lot of blood. And now he's walking, and he's not able to keep up. He's not able to keep, and it's not because he couldn't carry it. He's carrying it, but he's now slow in carrying it. And so now they grab, and here comes a man by the name of Simon from a city called Cyrene, or a territory called Cyrene, which is in Libya now. It's in modern Libya, down by the shores of Tripoli. He was a Jew. He was a passerby coming in from the country, a country guy. So without John telling us this, we would not be able to see that Jesus set us an example and was a perfect type of Abraham and Isaac. You remember when Abraham took Isaac? Look, I want to turn to for just a moment to the book of Genesis chapter 22. And dropping down to verse 6, where it says, you remember in chapter 22, after promising a son for so long, now Isaac now is past wean stage, and he's now a young boy. And Abraham took Isaac because God told him, I want you to sacrifice. I want you to offer me your only son now. Abraham took the wood. They arrive at the place where Abraham's looking for a place to, we're going to go off here. He tells his servant, you stay here. My son and I are going to go off and worship. Abraham took wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac. Isaac was the one that carried that wood. And he himself, Abraham, carried what? The fire. He must have had like a torch of fire and a knife, which was a perfect type of Jesus carrying the wood, going outside the camp, carrying this wood to be crucified. How would it be if Jesus makes a remark like this in Luke chapter 14, verse 27? And anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. That's Luke 14, verse 27. Well, how could he say that to us if he didn't carry any cross? Well, you didn't carry it. Somebody else carried yours. But no, he did carry it. And he would have carried it all the way. But I think the soldiers wanted to move along faster. You're not going fast enough. Here. Hey. Now, I want you to just put yourself in position. Okay? Here's a guy all the way down in the country of Cyrene, kind of in this area. This is Passover time, one of the three pilgrim feasts. All your males shall appear before the Eternal, you know, at the Passover, at Pentecost, and at the Feast of Tabernacles. Those were the three pilgrim, they call them pilgrim feasts, when Jews from all over came from various places. Now, Simon of Cyrene didn't appear to be a very rich guy. He was a country guy. And he's coming quite a long way, close to 800 miles from Cyrene all the way to Jerusalem. Now, you think about 800 miles, you and I wouldn't think too bad about it. But even that, it's a long drive. If I said drive 800 miles, that'd be all like going to Phoenix and turning around and come back. That's 800 miles. That's a good 10-hour, at least 10-hour drive, and that's on superhighways driving about 70 to 80 miles an hour. Imagine 800 miles, you have to come across the Mediterranean there, in that part of the ocean, to get to the land. Then you got to take a donkey or something, or walk, or whatever. There was no fast. It probably took him 4 or 5 days to make 800 miles. But here he was. He's coming to Jerusalem. Now, I don't know how many times he'd been there, but it takes a lot of money to get there. He may not have been a very rich guy. He's coming to Jerusalem. What do you think he wants to see when he comes to Jerusalem? He wants to see the temple of Herod. Herod's temple, this great spectacular edifice that Herod created, which was going to be the temple of God, the house of God. I'm going to go see that. I'm going to have a lamb. I'm going to sacrifice the lamb. I'm going to have this wonderful lamb dinner, you know, for the Passover's time. All this, he's so excited. He's coming to do it. He doesn't know a thing. You know, it's not like today, anything that happens in any part of the country, you get the news about it. There was no news down in Cyrene. Hey, there's a lot of uproar about this guy by the name of Jesus, and everything's upset, and the chief priests are all upset about him. And he's coming in. He's looking at Jerusalem. He's here. I'm going to the temple. I'm going to walk over and go to the temple. Hey, what's all this crowd and everything? And all of a sudden, a Roman soldier says, hey, you, get over here. He is seized, says the scriptures. He is pressed into the service. Hey, you. And you obey a Roman soldier, just like if somebody, a policeman said, hey, move over to that lane. Get up, you know, stop your car. You know, you obey because they have power and authority over you. And so here's this guy. I don't know. What's going on? Grab this. And carry this for him. Okay, I'll carry this parabellum. I'll put it over my shoulders and walk. What is going on here? Think about his place in the history of Christianity. His name is mentioned 3 times in the Gospels. Isn't it interesting, of all the people who would want to be with Jesus Christ, who would carry the cross of Christ, it wasn't Peter. It wasn't James. It wasn't John. It wasn't any of the men who had spent time 3.5 years, day and night, with Jesus Christ that carried the cross of their Lord. It wasn't any of them. It was a passerby. The King James says, one. They grabbed one by the name of Simon. They grabbed, he was so anonymous. He was just, we find out his name later. He came from Cyrene. There were a number of people that had, Cyrene had, the people there were often part of what we call the Hellenistic Jews. Hellenistic Jews often named their children Hellenistic names. For instance, he is called the father of Rufus and the father of Alexander. And Alexander, what would you name Alexander for? Why would a Jew name his kid Alexander? After whom? Probably after Alexander the Great. A city there in northern Egypt called Alexandria, the center of learning and all the big libraries there in the top, there in northern Africa, in Egypt. So when you named your children that, they called you a Hellenistic Jew. You were not, you know, the Hebrew Jews. You were more of a Hellenistic. You liked the Hellenists. You liked the idea of the Greeks. You liked the way they were doing things. And there was a synagogue in Jerusalem for those people. Let's turn to Acts chapter 6. And Stephen, full of grace and power, this is when this is dropping down to verse 8. Stephen, full of grace and power and performing great wonders and signs among the people. But some men from what was called the synagogue of the freedmen, including both Cyrenians and Alexandrians, some from Cilicia and Asia, rose up and argued with Stephen. These are the people that really were angry with him. Now here he is, he's passing by, he's on his way to the temple, somebody grabs him, get over here, grab that and carry that for this guy, follow him. I follow him, I'm going right behind him now, I've got his cross because he can't walk fast enough. He's bleeding. He's crying. And this is what he hears. You want to know what Simon hears now? He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know what's going on in Jerusalem. He's from the country. He's a country, I don't want to say country bumpkin, but he's a country guy from Cyrene. And he's just coming to Jerusalem for this great, glorious thing. I want to go there. I want to have the Passover. I want to visit the temple. I want to see all this stuff. And then I'm going to go home and tell all my country friends, hey, what happened in Jerusalem? Man, it's just, you can't believe the beautiful temple and Herod's temple. We had the beautiful Passover lamb and we had a dinner. This was great. He was going to go back and enjoy telling everybody about his big adventure. And it was an adventure. I'm going to tell you something. You come 800 miles in those days from that place. That was an adventure. But here's what he hears now. Crowds are screaming. People are in confusion. What's going on? What's going on? They're marching now outside the city. We're going out away from the Jerusalem. We're moving outside of its city limits. Where are we going? We're going to that hill over there. You just keep going. Just keep going. Follow the crowd. Follow this guy. So he's walking. And what does he hear? Luke chapter 23, dropping down to verse 26. And as they led him away, they seized, I'm going to read it again, they seized Simon from Cyrene, who was on his way in from the country. And he put the cross on him. So they grabbed him. You carry this. And they made him carry it behind Jesus. Verse 27. A large number of people followed him. Now there were people following Jesus. Now all these people. What's all this crowd around? Including women who mourned and wailed for him. No, they're not going to. Here, these women, they're now are crying for Jesus. And here's Simon. I got this pole. I got this parabellum. I'm carrying this cross. And here are these people crying. And Jesus turns and he said to them, daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me. Weep for yourselves. And for your children. He'll say, blessed are the barren women, the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed. Then they will say to the mountains, fall on us, and the hills, cover us. For if men do these things when the tree is green, what will happen when it is dry? So he's walking, he's hearing all this, he's hearing people say these things. He's got to march all the way up, he's all the way out of the city, up to this hill called Golgotha. And there he now, okay, all right, you, that's fine. Drop it here. Just put it here. Okay. Stand over there. Yes, sir. Yes, you know, he's standing there. Now they take Jesus. Now they pin Jesus down. Now they pound the nails in Jesus' hands. Now they pound it. Now they fix that parabellum onto the regular cross and pound the nails in Jesus' feet and lift the whole big upward post, the vertical post, and drop it into the hole. And here's Simon. Oh my, what did this guy do? Well, he's called king of the, you know, he's probably asking people. He's seeing now. Here are the Pharisees, the chief priests. Well, you know, look at him. He said, "Come on down from there, pal." And we would believe you. And here are people and other women over here crying. You know, he's got disciples. Well, where are they? Well, there's one of them, I think, you know. And he sees John and he's standing around. All these things are happening. He's bewildered. He doesn't know anything that's going on. He's bewildered. But he heard that. He becomes the man who follows Christ to the cross. He carries the cross of Christ. He was an unknown, but he carries the cross of Christ. How many people would give everything, you know, to be there to carry for him? He can't carry it. I'll carry it for him. I'll carry the cross of Christ. Is there a Simon somewhere? Is there a person that is not necessarily prominent, doesn't do anything that anyone knows is great, but all of a sudden God just laid it. All of a sudden it was God who laid this on this man. Because think about the timing. He had to be there at the right time. He had to be walking through Jerusalem at the exact same moment, right? Look at the timing. How would you engineer that? How would all that be taken care of? Was it just by happenstance? Was it just by accident? Could it have been the next guy over here that was asked to do it? Could it have been you or me if we had been there walking through Jerusalem? Who could have done this? But I could tell you this, I would almost be willing to bet you that Peter, James, John, and Matthew, and all the other disciples that he had would have given anything to have been there. And I would have wanted to help him. I would have wanted to help him carry that cross. But none of them did. It was an unknown. It was a passerby. It was a guy from the country. You know, when the Apostle Paul was struck down on the road to Damascus, you remember he was a persecutor of the church. Do you remember that story? I want to read it beginning in Acts chapter 9. And Paul was on the way. He had gotten all his things, and he was coming out. He was breathing. I'm going to read the beginning of chapter 9, verse 1. Now Paul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest, and he asked for letters from him to the synagogues at Damascus, so that if he found any belonging to the way, that is the way of Christ, both men and women, that he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. So Paul says, I want letters of authority. I'll go after them. You just give me the power and authority to get them. He was going up to Damascus. He would go into the synagogues. This is what I want you to turn over anybody who talks about this man and this guy that's called Jesus, called Yeshua. And it came about that as he journeyed, he was approaching Damascus, and suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him, and he fell to the ground and heard a voice saying, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And he said, Who are you, Lord? And he said, I am Jesus whom you are persecuting. But rise, enter the city, and it shall be told you what you must do. And the men who traveled with him stood speechless, hearing the voice, but seeing no one. I guess they didn't see the light. And Saul got up from the ground. And though his eyes were open, he could see nothing. And leading him by the hand, they brought him into Damascus. Now here he comes into the city. He was going to come. That's where he was headed. Going to come into the city. And he was there 3 days without sight. And neither ate nor drank. Now there was a certain disciple at Damascus. How prominent is the Apostle Paul in Christianity? He wrote the largest corpus of, what we call a corpus, I mean, it's the body, the largest body of literature of the New Testament. 14 books of the New Testament that we have out of the, how many books in the New Testament? 27, right? Out of the 27 books, he wrote 14 of them. So here is this man, prominent as anything you could ever imagine. And how many of you wouldn't love to just sit down with the Apostle Paul and talk to the Apostle Paul? And if the Apostle Paul were blind, if the Apostle Paul couldn't see, he would do something for him. Well, here's a guy, he was a disciple. A certain, that's all it says about him. He was not so prominent. It was just, hey, here was a certain guy at Damascus named Ananias. And the Lord said to him in a vision, Ananias? And he said, Behold, here I am, Lord. That is the way you answer God. Here I am. And the Lord said to him, Arise and go to a street called Straight, and inquire at the house of Judas for a man from Tarsus by the name of Saul. For behold, he, Saul, is praying. And this is what God did. And he, Saul, has seen a vision. He has seen in a vision a man named Ananias come in and lay his hands on him so that he might regain his sight. Now, here's what God did. God gave Paul. Paul's praying. He's praying. And all of a sudden, he sees in a vision. He sees Ananias, whom he never met, a certain disciple who was really not prominent at all. So Ananias said, verse 13, now Ananias protests a little bit, but Ananias said, Lord, I have heard from many about this man. I know Paul. Paul doesn't know me. I've heard how much harm he did to the saints at Jerusalem. And here he has authority from the chief priests to bind all who call upon your name. Now, there were many, it's an interesting statement. You notice that word in verse 14, this is Acts 9, verse 14. He has authority from the chief priests. What was the chief priest? It has more than one. Why? Because in the ancient days, in the time of Moses, when they made that the high priest was the high priest, he was the high priest forever until he died. He was for his lifetime. But during the time of the Roman occupation and Judah being subjected to Rome, they had elections and they had appointees, and they changed high priests regularly. That's why you have one high priest, Caiaphas, and another, his father-in-law, who had been the high priest, Annas. They both were high priests. And you might have others that are not mentioned. They were bought and they were paid, and they, you know, other ways in which they gained their power. So he says, you know, Lord, I've heard about this guy. He's dangerous. He's trying to come here and put away everybody who calls on you. And God said to him, the Lord said to him, go, for he is a chosen instrument of mine to bear my name before the Gentiles and the kings and the sons of Israel. For I will show him, listen to this next statement, how much he must suffer for my name's sake. Ananias departed. He entered the house, and after laying his hands on him, he said, Brother Saul, the Lord Jesus, who appeared to you on the road by which you were coming, has sent me so that you may regain your sight and be filled with the Holy Spirit. And immediately there fell from his eyes something like scales, and he regained his sight, and he arose, Paul arose, and was baptized, and he took food and was strengthened. Now for several days he was with the disciples who were at Damascus, and immediately he began to proclaim Jesus in the synagogue, saying, He, Jesus, is the Son of God. And all those hearing him continued to be amazed. And they were saying, isn't this the guy who in Jerusalem destroyed those who called on Jesus' name and who had come here for the purpose of bringing them bound before the chief priests? But Saul kept increasing in strength and confounding the Jews who lived in Damascus by proving from the scriptures, I'm sure it was from the scriptures, that this Jesus is the Messiah, the Christ. I don't know about you, but how many people would have loved to have gone there, met the Apostle Paul, put their hands on him, you know, and have the scales be removed from his eyes? But it was an anonymous guy. It wasn't one of the other apostles. Peter didn't do it. James didn't do it. Bartholomew didn't do it. Matthew didn't do it. Or the other disciples. Judas didn't do it. Judas, not Iscariot. None of the others did it. A guy by the name of Ananias. Ananias, a certain disciple. In the world of the Bible, sometimes there are people who rise to the occasion, who have the Spirit of God come in them, whom God chooses. He chooses them and puts them in a place to do something historical. Yes, Ananias was one. Simon of Cyrene was another. And here's what Jesus' words were. I want you to listen to some of his words. I'm going to read it from the book of Matthew, chapter 10, verse 38. And he who does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. And Mark, chapter 8, and verse 34. And he summoned the crowd with his disciples, and he said to them, there's a crowd out here. If anyone wishes to come to me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. In Luke chapter 9, verse 23, and he was saying to them, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. So here was the man who literally, who actually walked those streets all the way up to Golgotha, the hill of the skull where Jesus was crucified, following, I'm sure, who later became his Lord. Now, Mark's Gospel, the traditions say, Mark's Gospel was written from Rome. Let's read Mark's Gospel again, chapter 15, and beginning in verse 19, it says, verse 19, and they kept beating his head with a reed and spitting on him and kneeling and bowing before him, talking about Jesus. And they mocked him, and they took a purple robe off, and they put it on his own garments, finally, and they led him to crucify him. In verse 21, and they pressed into service a passerby coming into the country, Simon of Cyrene, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to bear his cross. And they brought, verse 22, they brought him to the place of Golgotha, which is translated the place of the skull. And they tried to give him, meaning Jesus, wine to drink mixed with myrrh, and he did not take it. And they crucified him, divided up his garments from among themselves. And casting lots, they decided which man should get his garments. It was the third hour when they crucified him. So they started third hour, that's 9 o'clock in the morning, to crucify him. Now, there are a lot of people around. They had guards, you know, everybody had to, each prisoner was guarded. First of all, you couldn't pull them down from there if you wanted to stop their suffering. They wouldn't let you do that. Number two, you couldn't, if you didn't like them, you couldn't hit them with extra sticks or anything. They wouldn't let you do that. He was being crucified. They just let you, the guy's going to be crucified. He's hung there until he dies, suffering terribly. And so Mark's Gospel says, Mark's Gospel is probably written from Rome. And in the book of Romans, chapter 16, there's a reference to Rufus. He's greeting all these people, the Apostle Paul does, and this one and that one, right? In verse 13, greet Rufus, a chosen man in the Lord, also his mother and mine, from Rome. Mark's Gospel is the only one that mentions Simon's two kids. Why would you do that? Now, we can't prove that Rufus was the exact same Rufus. We can't prove it, but it's logical that it was. And I'll tell you why I think it's logical. Because those standing by, hearing Jesus' words, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. And he's talking about the other people and so on. And he's hearing, and people are hearing the mocking and the jeering and from the high priests and from the people who are, and from the political people who had a reason for Jesus to die. And you remember that there was a centurion standing there. He was a guard over some of these people who were being crucified. And in the book of Mark, chapter 15, dropping down to this little verse, it says in verse 39, "And when the centurion who was standing right in front of him," meaning Christ, he's standing there to guard. You don't want to let people come up and abuse them further or try to take them down. That centurion stood there. He had to hear all this stuff. He had to hear the high priest mocking. He had to hear them say, "Come on down, we'll believe you." He had to hear Jesus' statements. He had to hear all these statements, these words, and Jesus calling for "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," you know, "Why have you forsaken me?" And they said, "Well, he's waiting for Elijah." Well, you know, the word "Eli" means "my God." And Elijah, his name meant, Eliyah meant, "My God is Yahweh. My God is Yahweh." That's his name, Elijah's name. And so when they called Eli, Eli, they thought, "Oh, he's calling my God. That's, he's calling for Elijah." But then well, let's see if Elijah comes and rescues him. And of course, they had that thing from the book of Malachi that Elijah would come back, you know, and all that. So here's a centurion. He hears all this. He's seeing all this. He's seeing the torture. He's seeing Jesus. And he's hearing what Jesus is saying to the men on the cross. And the one guy says, "You know, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus says, "You know, I tell you this day, you will be with me in paradise." So when the centurion who was standing right in front of him saw the way he breathed his last, he said, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." Now, if he said that, and you're Simon, you don't know anything till you get there. You're like, "What is all this about?" And you're asking people, and you start to find out, they crucified for what reason? I mean, what did he do so bad? Well, he healed people. He preached this. He talked that. He said, "That's why they killed him? They crucified him for that reason? What's going on?" Is it not possible that Simon the Cyrene looked more deeply into Christianity and looked more deeply into Jesus' teachings and became converted? He, his sons, and his wife. Jesus bore the cross. You and I, just like Simon from Cyrene, must bear the cross. We must bear our cross and follow Jesus. Because the Apostle Paul said it like this, "I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ Jesus who lives in me. And the life I now live, I live by the faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me." Each of us has a cross to bear. Each of us has to do something in our life, in Christianity. And I'll tell you what, it would have been an honor to be chosen, to be pushed into the service of carrying the cross of Christ.